It's been 19 years since the United States opened a prison at the Guantanamo Bay Navy Base for war on terrorism detainees. The population, once close to 800 prisoners, now stands at 40. Most were held without a trial. Six of those 40 detainees have been cleared for release, but the office to relocate them was closed 4 years ago. The Obama administration failed to close Guantanamo. President Joe Biden's Secretary of Defense, General Lloyd Austin, said he will follow through on closing it, but there are still hurdles in the way. Michelle Parity is a leading human rights lawyer who has represented Guantanamo detainees. He's also a scholar of national security law and author of the book Last Mission to Tokyo. First, just to bring our audience up to speed, Gitmo's been up and running for so long now that there's an entire generation that has grown up with it their whole lives that they don't really realize what it is. So what is Guantanamo Bay?
Guantanamo Bay is a Navy base that's existed since the end of the 19th century. But in January of 2002, the Bush administration opened a prison for, quote unquote, war on terrorism detainees in Guantanamo on the premise that Guantanamo was essentially a legal no man's land. It was actually described at the time as the legal equivalent of outer space because they wanted to be able to hold these detainees in a place where no international law or no American law was believed to apply.
So how many people were there in the beginning? How many are there now?
So the population ebbed and flowed through the early years of the Bush administration. Altogether, about 800 men have passed through there in some way or another. And now, today, in 2021, that number is down to 40. There are 40 men there.
And sometimes we have found situations where these men have been cleared or they have been sort of exported to third countries, not to the United States, not to their home countries?
Yes. So the population has largely been sent to foreign countries. In fact, six of the men in Guantanamo today have been cleared for release, some for as much as a decade. And there have been a variety of political, legal, diplomatic obstacles to simply making good on that release recommendation to send them to a foreign country where they can be held. Although one detainee, in fact, a number of Guantanamo detainees have actually been held for various periods in the United States. Most people don't know that. There was one individual by the name of Yasser Hamdi, who was a Guantanamo detainee who turned out to have American citizenship. He was brought and held for a number of years in the Charleston brig. Another Guantanamo detainee by the name of Ahmed Gilani was brought to New York in 2009. Prosecuted for his role in the bombing of the African embassies in 1998, and is now serving a life sentence in a supermax prison in Colorado. And I bet most of your viewers have never heard of him. So it's not entirely true that no detainees have ever come to the United States, but the vast majority, as you said, have been sent to third countries, typically their country of origin or a closely related country.
So if the six that are there now could go, why haven't they been sent away already?
Well, the Trump administration closed what was called the Guantanamo Transfer Office, the Guantanamo Closure Office, which was an office in the Department of State that was responsible for finding places for the detainees to go. So that was closed 4 years ago. There were actually an effort by a number of the detainees to try and get out of the door in January of 2017 before it was deemed too late. So I think one of the major things the Biden administration has to do in order to essentially make good on President Barack Obama's promise to close Guantanamo and to sort of resolve that unfinished business is to reopen the Guantanamo Closure Office, who will spearhead the efforts to find a place for those six individuals who are currently cleared to go, as well as other individuals who are likely to be cleared in the years to come.
What's the hard cost of keeping that prison open? And also, I guess there's also a pretty significant soft cost.
Absolutely. The hard cost, just in dollar terms, for detaining the detainees is $13 million a year each. So this is the most expensive gated community in the Caribbean you've ever heard of. But the soft costs are astronomical. They are costs to our diplomatic credibility around the world. They are costs to our ability to cooperate with allies in warfighting efforts. There are a lot of countries who actually now, you know, traditional allies in Europe, for example, who now have to think twice before interacting with the United States on a on defense objectives because of the risk, for example, of individuals being sent to Guantanamo. I think there's also a cost here at home. I don't think you can see children in cages on the southern border if we hadn't in some way or another created the legal and social infrastructure of seeing men in cages in Guantanamo a few years before that. Guantanamo is a place that from its very inception was designed to be a place where people were not people. And once you start creating a legal regime around the idea that there are people who have no rights at all, they are merely objects, it's very easy for that to spill over into all manner of it's very easy for that to spill over into all aspects of American in society, whether or not it's the tactics used in policing, whether or not it's the treatment of immigrants at the border or near the border, the treatment of refugees. Very quickly, the law of Guantanamo has become infected, in a way, has infected the law of the United States.
Is the very existence of this facility and the people that are in it an opportunity for our enemies to recruit against us?
It's not just an opportunity, it's a primary recruiting tool. There is, particularly for Islamist terrorists around the world, there is a long tradition going back to the 1950s of radical Muslim terrorists using the imprisoned, essentially political prisoners, as their primary recruiting tool. And Guantanamo has been the most spectacular example of that around the world. There's a reason, thinking back only a few years to when ISIS was, you know, doing horrible things on the news every night. There's a reason that ISIS put men in orange jumpsuits before burning them alive or beheading them, because they were making a moral equivalence to Guantanamo, a moral equivalence that, you know, I certainly would object to, and I'm sure you would, but a moral equivalence that can probably seem fairly appealing to a lot of people around the world, particularly people who might be ambivalent about whether or not the United States is still the shining city on the hill that they always believed it to be.
So what is the solution then? I can hear people listening to this interview saying, okay, fine, we close Gitmo. How should we be bringing people to justice?
Sure. So the easiest, most tried and true way to bring people to justice, such as the five men charged for perpetrating the attacks of September 11th, are the federal courts. Eric Holder, when he became the attorney general back in 2009, put together a plan to prosecute all of the 9/11 conspirators in a federal court. And people at the time, I remember, balked at the idea that it could possibly cost $100 million to do that. We spend that every year in Guantanamo. So if it's simply a matter of cost, we are acting irrationally in Guantanamo. So you could bring the people who need to be charged for serious crimes, including 9/11, resolve those cases definitively, resolve them credibly, resolve them publicly in New York City. You could do that very easily in federal courts. The federal courts have a sterling track record of not only convicting people in terrorism cases, but of giving them extremely stiff sentences. Very easily under the federal sentencing guidelines, anyone charged with the terrorism offense gets a minimum of 17 years. The federal courts are there and open. So for the people who need to be charged, you can try them in a federal court. For the other detainees, the detainee population now, as you said, this has been a generation. The men who were brought there back in 2002, before the iPod, not the iPhone, but before the iPod was invented, are now old men. The youngest of the detainees is in his mid-40s. The oldest of the detainees is in his mid-70s. There is simply no rational security reason to hold the vast majority of the 40 men who are in Guantanamo. It's a small problem. It's a problem that Biden can solve if there's the political will to do it. And there are very straightforward, practical steps that he could do to very quickly reduce the detainee population and close Guantanamo, close this chapter in American history once and for all.
This is still under the purview of the Department of Defense. The Pentagon responds to the administration that's in power, the president that's in power. Why is there any interest in this not being in the federal court system? Is this a turf war where the military feels like they should have the right to bring these people to justice?
I think traditionally there's been an element of sort of bureaucratic politics. I think there, certainly during the Obama administration, there became this, I would call it a faux machismo around the war on terrorism that you saw former President Trump often play up, that Guantanamo, we're going to fill it with bad dudes. To seem tough on terrorism on TV, you would say you're in favor of Guantanamo, when in reality, it's the softest thing you can do to respond to the threat of terrorism. So I think that's a big part of it. Politics has played a tremendous part in making Guantanamo as dysfunctional as it is. I think there are also vested interests inside, not so much the Department of Defense, but at a much lower level. As we're conducting this interview yesterday, as something of a parting shot, an outgoing Trump official charged three more men in the military commissions in Guantanamo. By all accounts and by all measures, only to complicate Secretary Austin's ability to make good on his promise to the Congress that he was going to really make an initiative to close Guantanamo. There is a kind of political and legal vandalism that Guantanamo has attracted. And that's just something that's made it an incredibly intractable problem for a number of years.
So what happens to these three, I think it's Indonesian men that have been charged, or they might go to trial now?
I wouldn't put my money on it, to be perfectly candid. These men have been in Guantanamo, or at least in U.S. custody, since I think 2003. They have been theoretical targets for prosecution since 2010, without any action by either the Obama or Trump administrations in that direction. It's only, again, this parting shot by an official sort of very deep down in the Department of Defense. But to give you a measure of how any trial might go, the 9/11 conspirators, the five 9/11 conspirators, have been facing trial since 2008. There's no trial date set yet. They're not looking to actually have a trial in that case, probably for years, and maybe never. The only thing that has been true about the military commissions, which are these tribunals created in Guantanamo, has been that they are dysfunctional. They are constantly beset by errors and issues that would never occur in a federal court. To give you just one example, in the 9/11 case, I think they've now had six judges in the past 2 years. And you can't blame all of that dysfunction on the COVID-19 pandemic. The only thing that has been unflaggingly true about the military commissions is delay. And one thing after another, whether it's the six judges now in the past 2 years in the 9/11 case, whether it's the judges in some of the other cases who were actually applying for jobs secretly with the government and therefore required the Court of Appeals to throw out years of their proceedings on the grounds of essentially judicial corruption. One thing after another has made these trials into a waiting for Godot experience. They're the trials that everyone's waiting for, but never come. And these three Indonesians, assuming the Biden administration doesn't take fairly rapid steps to pull back that order to prosecute them, they're going to be in some form of rope-a-dope trial process for the next decade. And I think it's really just a startling feature of Guantanamo and the military commissions that we actually are having fairly realistic conversations about the 9/11 case not actually being resolved until the people who were not yet born on September 11th are approaching middle age. And I think that's a tragedy. That's a deep tragedy for this country. It's a tragedy for the victims. I live in New York. It's a tragedy for all New Yorkers who still, every time, if you're of a certain age like I am, every time you see the Freedom Tower, you're reminded of the two towers that aren't there anymore. And it's a scar on our country that has yet to heal. And Guantanamo is the primary reason that scar continues to fester.
Michelle Paradis is a senior attorney at the Department of Defense Office of the Chief Defense Counsel. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me on.